Hello and welcome to the debate right here at Press TV. I'm Marzi Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, was all the death and destruction pre-planned by the United Kingdom, if we are to believe what former French Foreign Minister Roland Dumas has admitted, then yes. He said that the war on Syria was pre-planned and implemented to bring about regime change in Syria and to weaken the resistance against Israel. Stay with us as we take a look at this latest change in the situation in Syria.
Quel but ? L'idée de renverser Bachar ?
Moi, je vais vous dire quelque chose. J'étais il y a 2 ans à peu près, avant que les hostilités commencent en Syrie. Je me trouvais en Angleterre par hasard pour d'autres choses, pas du tout de la Syrie. J'ai rencontré des responsables anglais et quelques-uns qui sont mes amis m'ont avoué en me sollicitant qu'il se préparait quelque chose en Syrie. C'était en Angleterre et pas en Amérique. L'Angleterre préparait l'invasion des rebelles en Syrie. Et on m'a même demandé à moi, sous le prétexte que j'étais ancien ministre des Affaires étrangères, si je participerais comme ça. J'ai évidemment dit le contraire. J'ai dit, moi, je suis français, ça ne m'intéresse pas. Mais c'est pour dire que cette opération vient de très loin. Elle a été préparée, conçue.
Former French Foreign Minister speaking about Britain's plans for Syria. Roland Dumas was speaking in an interview with French TV station LCP. He said regime change in Syria was part of efforts to undermine regional resistance against the Israeli regime. Last month, under pressure from Britain and France, the European Union removed its arms ban on the Syrian insurgents. Meanwhile, the US, which has been spearheading efforts towards regime change in Syria, has officially announced plans to arm the Takfiri insurgents. The U.S. is also reportedly considering imposing a no-fly zone over Syria. Western diplomats have told media outlets that a no-fly zone will be operated from Jordan, where the U.S. has stationed troops as well as Patriot missiles and F-16 fighter jets. Latest opinion polls show the majority of Americans are against their country's involvement in the Syrian crisis. The Obama administration's decision to arm the insurgents has come under fire at home.
Today we heard from President Obama that the war in Syria will be escalated. He now has agreed to send weaponry in to assist the rebels. It's escalation, that's the proper word, because we've already been involved for quite a few months. We've been supporting the rebels for probably the past 2 years, supposedly for humanitarian reasons. But now there's going to be a much more aggressive approach, and we're going to send weapons.
Western governments, including the U.S., are said to believe that the ouster of the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad would serve their best geostrategic and geopolitical interests in the Middle East. All this comes against a backdrop of frequent victories scored by Syrian forces. Western officials admit that the Syrian army has the upper hand on the ground. With the tide turning Assad's way, analysts have serious doubts that a U.S. arms supplies and even a no-fly zone will be a silver bullet for the insurgents.
Well, I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of Chicago, Mr. Stephen Lindman, author and radio host. And from London, former Army and Counterterrorism Intelligence Officer, Mr. Charles Shoebridge. Thank you so much for being with us, both of you. Well, I'd like to start this off in Chicago with Mr. Lindman. How likely is this claim by Dumas to be true?
Hello, Mazia. Well, it's absolutely true, but he didn't tell the full dirty story. The full dirty story is that Washington is the Machiavellian mastermind behind this. Washington planned regime change in half a dozen or more regional countries at least a decade ago, at least over a decade ago. I believe it goes back to the 1990s. I didn't say that, Mazia. General Wesley Clark said it. He's done video tube interviews. He said it on that. He wrote a book called Winning Modern Wars. He learned about it after the Afghan war started, weeks after 9/11. He named Libya. He named Iran. He named Syria. He named Iraq. He named Sudan. He named a couple of other countries. General Wesley Clark, the former NATO commander, is the one who spilled the beans. It's no surprise. I believe the planning began in the 1990s. The Machiavellian evil influence, I believe, was Paul Wolfowitz. He's still around. The war in Libya is Washington's war. There are no rebels in Libya. These are U.S. enlisted death squads. They're brought in from dozens of countries. They're U.S. foot soldiers, proxy foot soldiers. They're fighting a sovereign country. The issue is not what kind of government Assad has. The issue is whether a government is subservient to Washington. Syria is an independent country. Washington tolerates no independent countries. Look at all the countries that have been attacked. They've been sovereign, independent countries.
There were brutal dictatorships in the Middle East.
They're America's best friends.
All right, stay with me. Let me get Mr. Shoebridge in on this. Your take, Mr. Shoebridge, on what Mr. Lindman has just said.
Well, it's part of certainly the United Kingdom and France and the United States do have some form of master plan for Syria. It's clear because their stated aims in terms of humanitarian intervention, in terms of democracy and human rights, for example, being, if you like, furthered and fostered by the backing
my question,
of the rebels.
My question, let me make it clear, because the question I had asked Mr. Lindman, is it true what Mr. Dumas said? And we're not talking about because of human rights. We're talking about a pre-planned invasion or pre-planned war for Syria. Do you think that that is the case?
Well, the only answer I can give you on that is that I don't know. I mean, it's something that's appeared in the news today. It's come up in the past. It may be true. It may not be true. I don't know about this. I was asked to come here and talk about chemical weapons. I'm happy to do so.
Well, we will, definitely. It's all part of the same scenario because, on the other hand, well, let me go back to Mr. Lindman then. Mr. Lindman, according to our other guests, he's not sure about if it's true or not. Something very curious happened just a few hours ago, actually, and that was during the press conference with Russian President Vladimir Putin and the British Prime Minister David Cameron. And actually, the subject was Syria itself, and not one British journalist stood up to ask the question about these new allegations from Duma. Well, let me go back to actually Mr. Shoebridge, since you are in London. Your take, sir, why wouldn't a British journalist pursue such a very big story, or it should be a big story?
Well, that is something I very much can comment on. It was not at all unusual for the British mainstream media, the broadcast and the print media, to not challenge the received narrative that is being put out by government. We saw that largely in the Iraq situation. We saw it far more in the Libya situation, where a certain narrative of freedom-fighting rebels, pro-Western secular Democrats, fighting for freedom was put over and largely unchallenged in the mainstream media. That is the same as is happening now in relation to Syria. This narrative has been pushed for some 2 years now that has created a very false picture of what the rebels actually are. But what's it encouraging? Your report alluded to opinion polls, and these aren't just in the United States, these are also in the United Kingdom, which show consistently and increasingly that Western populations, Britain and America particularly, are seeing through this particular narrative that is peddled by the media. And the media is in fact responding to that by actually more and more now including stories that are not supportive of the rebel position in Syria. They are more and more being prepared to challenge, if you like, to some degree, the government's version of events, and also to portray the rebels as in many cases they clearly are.
What about that, Mr. Lindman? Shouldn't there be an investigation at the very least? And you talked, of course, about even other claims. But let's look at the Syrian situation. With something like this being revealed from the international perspective, shouldn't at the very least now there be an aggressive effort to try to investigate? Because obviously, if this is the case, then those responsible are responsible for committing war crimes and beyond.
Absolutely, Marzia. And I would say point blank that the job of good journalism, I'm a journalist, the job of good journalism is to challenge the powerful when they commit wrongdoing. The morning headlines in Britain, in France, in America, across Europe should read, cover up, planned aggression against Syria, cover up. Who's responsible? Accountability is demanded. Do you see that? No. The media, the major media, the BBC, the New York Times, CNN, Fox News, they run cover for these war criminals. They're not doing their job. They violate core journalistic ethics. I absolutely hold my government responsible. I do it every day. I hold the British government responsible, the French government responsible, the Israeli government responsible. All these four countries are conspiring to overthrow the government of Syria. What they're doing is lawless. They violate international law. They violate the laws of their own country. They're doing it anyway. And there isn't one major media journalist who has the courage to stand up and say so and write it and put it in a headline and say it on television or on radio. I do it every single day.
Okay. Well, Mr. Shoebridge, let's look at this. With the lack of journalists, as Mr. Lindman said, put really basically doing their jobs, what we have now, instead of, we would say, some reflection of what they have done at the very least, we have now U.S. President Barack Obama basically admitting directly that it's time to send arms to the Syrian rebels. Of course, not that they have not done it, but now officially admitting that this is what needs to be done in a possible no-fly zone. What will it take to stop what is happening, this tragedy that is taking place in Syria?
Well, let's not forget that no-fly zone, although the American and the British administrations, for example, have said there is nothing off the table, there has been no solid suggestion of a no-fly zone coming from the United States. And indeed, it would be difficult to see how a no-fly zone could be justified in terms of even these chemical weapons allegations. There's been no suggestion made that these chemical weapons were, even if they exist, were delivered by means of aircraft. It's interesting the way that this pretext, and it clearly does appear to be a pretext of this chemical weapons use, has been deployed in the same way, of course, as WMD was deployed in the run-up to the Iraq War. And indeed, the threat of WMD was even mentioned in respect of Libya and other places. It's clearly, look at the timing of this decision to arm the rebels. And indeed, let's be clear on this as well. The Americans have actually said that they're going to supply military equipment. A lot of the media are being briefed that this is arms, but no, whether a decision's been made or not on this, it may well be still that, overtly at least, America may be reluctant still to supply arms to these rebels because of the consequences of doing so, should the media, some media later on report, for example, that these weapons have ended up in the hands of the wrong kind of rebels, as the Americans would call it. Let's look at the timing of this. You've got the rebel reversal at Qusair very, very recently, but you've also got Obama under pressure from Britain and France to support their stand on possibly arming the rebels. But above all, and this is very crucial, that hasn't been picked up by the media, you've got the situation where the rebels themselves have refused to attend Obama's peace conference that Obama and Putin agreed between themselves. Now, Putin has delivered the Assad government to that those peace talks, but the rebels have refused to go, and even the New York Times reported about 2 weeks ago that the rebels were refusing to attend unless America promised them arms. And really, the timing of this cannot be a coincidence.
So you think that this is just a verbal agreement that they are promising them arms in order to get the rebels to the table? Why would that be the case when the rebels are being totally funded by the United States?
Because you've got an issue here of public perception. America has gone along with the idea recently, changed its policies, and instead of going publicly, at least, for victory for the rebels, they have appeared conciliatory and are suggesting that there should be peace talks, because the bloodshed is beginning to such a state that people everywhere are questioning what the West, for example, is doing there in encouraging this bloodshed. So, of course, the rebels, if you like, they haven't actually done exactly as Obama wanted. They haven't been able to put together a team for negotiations. They have put in place all sorts of preconditions to attending these talks. It's clear that for the rebels, they want the fall of Assad. They do not want peace and an end to the bloodshed in Syria. And so consequently, they've been in a position where they can blackmail Obama. And Obama, he hasn't shown strength of resolve in saying that he will arm the rebels. What he has done has shown weakness in succumbing to the blackmail that they've said, unless you give us arms, we will not be attending your peace conference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Mr. Lindman, I want to look at this whole issue, because what we have with Obama saying that he's going to give them arms, it is in violation, actually. We're looking at the main, the group now is al-Nusra group, which has even been listed by the UN Security Council in May of 2013 as a terrorist group. Also, U.S. State Department, December of 2012 now, has basically said that they have also listed al-Nusra as a terrorist group. And of course, then that would make it illegally, as far as the nation's laws and internationally, for Obama and the administration in Washington to actually help them in any way. So, with this being the case, how does he get away with actually even saying now that he's going to send arms to Syria, the Syrian insurgents?
Well, you're absolutely right about al-Nusra being declared State Department, a designated terrorist organization, al-Qaeda, a designated State Department terrorist organization. They're America's leading fighters in Syria. As far as Obama's announcement, Marzia, Obama simply announced what America has been doing all along, what the so-called rebels want are more arms. They want heavier weapons than they already have. They really want air cover. They want an air force. They want a no-fly zone. The Washington Post and other U.S. media have been advocating this taking place. They want full-scale U.S. intervention. Whether Obama will do it or not, I don't know. I smell it coming. I call it Libya 2.0, with the ground troops supported by an air force. I think this is coming. But America has been doing all of these things from the very beginning. It simply hasn't been announced. The U.S. media has ignored it. If I know these things, Marzia, I don't have any inside contacts in Washington. The New York Times sure does. CNN sure does. The Washington Post sure does. Why haven't they reported it? Well, they haven't. I've reported it. I've repeated it. I'll continue repeating it. I know you want to get onto chemical weapons, because I sure have comments to make about that.
Okay, yeah, actually that is the next question in dealing with the whole chemical weapons. And we see that once again, Obama has made the claim that the Syrian government has used the chemical weapons. Now, we have seen, Mr. Shoebridge, we have seen even from the UN saying that the chemical weapons used were more likely from the insurgents, and there was no proof of the Syrian government using chemical weapons. And yet, he comes out, the U.S. administration in general, basically condemning the Syrian government once again for its use of chemical weapons. Why again are we seeing that, and how do they get away with doing this?
Yes, I've looked at what was said by Obama's spokesman on Friday, and I've also looked at some of the evidence that's been produced before by journalists. And it's true to say that there is quite a lot of evidence to suggest, as the Americans claim, that chemical weapons may well have been used in Syria. But there are two components to Obama's claim. The first, really, if we break it down, is that chemical weapons have been used. And they may well have been in some small quantities. That's still, even though that evidence is itself challenged. But the second component of Obama's claim has been largely ignored by the Western media so far. And that second component is not just that chemical weapons have been used, but that they have been used by Assad's regime. And on that particular strand of the assertions that Obama has made, they have produced, publicly at least, not a shred of evidence so far whatsoever. And indeed, their assertions seem to be based on the assumption, as indeed made out in the statement from Friday, that it must be Assad because the rebels don't have this capability. But we know from recent arrests, for example, in Turkey, recent arrests in Iraq, and indeed Carlo Del Ponte's remarks that you've just referred to, we know that that is likely to be untrue. And so it's a baseless statement that is looking more and more like a pretext for intervention and nothing more.
What do you think, Ms. Lindman? It sounds similar to the lead up to the Iraq invasion.
Oh, absolutely, Mazia. Obama's announcement, I call a Colin Powell moment. Colin Powell at the Security Council faking evidence. And later, when it was too late to matter, Mazia, he admitted he lied. Well, Obama is lying. There's not a shred of evidence that shows the Assad government has used chemical weapons. Khalid Del Ponte, heading the Assyrian Investigation Committee, she publicly admitted that the so-called rebels used chemical weapons. And then under heavy pressure, she recanted, she waffled, she backtracked, she changed her mind. She said, well, we're really not sure what weapons were used. We're really not sure who used them. She got it right the first time. She spilled the beans. She lied after that. The rebels have used chemical weapons. One of the articles I got out this morning, I titled, The Chemical Weapons Hoax. The rebels, so-called, have used them. The Assad government has not. It is a fact, and CNN reported some of this, that Pentagon contractors, I repeat, Pentagon contractors have trained these so-called rebels in the use of chemical weapons. I believe they have been supplied chemical weapons. I believe they've been trained on how to use them. They have used them. There is clear-cut, incontrovertible evidence that these so-called rebels have used it, have used them. There's not a shred of evidence that Assad has used them. And the question always is, what on earth reason would he have for doing it? He is routing these so-called rebels. What does he need to use chemical weapons for? None whatsoever. If he used them, it'd harm his own people. He has not used them.
Okay, you're saying very adamant that he has not used it, and also our London guest. However, it doesn't appear to change the reality that the United States seems to be quite adamant that they are using. Now the question is, what can be done? How do we stop the situation in Syria from becoming what happened in Iraq?
What one has to do is constantly bite away at the false bases of these arguments. For example, this conversation. I have an article tomorrow, hopefully being published in the Huffington Post, which will say exactly the same thing that I'm saying here and which your colleague, other contributor has just said. For example, looking at other aspects of evidence which has been missing from the Western media, such as motivation. Assad has no motivation to use these weapons whatsoever, especially in these small quantities. The rebels, on the other hand, to prompt US intervention, have since Obama's red line speech had every motivation to manufacture these incidents. And of course, they've got the capability to do so. So, and of course, it looks like this kind of false flag operation, if indeed that's what's happened, has now occurred. It may well be that there is some evidence of Assad using chemical weapons. It seems preposterous because there was no motivation for him to do so. But if there is evidence of them using them, Assad using them, this hasn't been made public by the West's government or their media so far. And all one can do is to chip away at this so-called evidential basis for action. And it's being successful to some degree. Public opinion is firmly against, in the West, intervention by the West in Syria. Furthermore, you have a large number of parliamentarians now questioning this narrative of the rebels being good guys, Assad being the bad. And that's especially the case in Britain and now in America, too.
All right. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for being with us. We're out of time. I appreciate you being with us. Out of Chicago, author and radio host, Mr. Stephen Lindman. And out of London, former Army and counterterrorism intelligence officer, Mr. Charles Shoebridge. And thank you, viewers, for being with us. Great to have you here. Make sure you join us same time, same place tomorrow for another The Debate. I'm Marzieh Hashemi, signing out from Tehran. Thank you, and goodbye.